It is 1 o'clock. We are going to call the meeting to order, and if we could do a roll call, please. Hardy, here.
Taylor?
Here.
Beanstalk?
Here.
Burr?
Here.
Harmon?
Here.
Hero?
Here.
Morrow?
Here.
All right, and we will go to agenda item number 2, a call to the public. This is if anybody in the public wishes to address the board on something that is not on the agenda. All right, agenda item number 3, declaration of conflicts of interest. If any of our board members has any conflicts that they need to declare. Okay, let's skip down to agenda item number 5, go right to the anesthesia and IV sedation committee. We do have someone signed in. Dr. Blazek is signed in. Yes, please.
Thanks for letting me come address the board about the topic of the anesthesia committee. And I would just like to start by asking the board if they by any chance received the letter from Dr. Spencer Wilson relating the recommendations from the Arizona Society of Oral Maxillofacial Surgery?
We did.
Okay, great. Excellent. I come today representing the Arizona Society of Oral Surgery and its membership of 120 plus practicing oral surgeons in the state of Arizona. We're encouraged and want to compliment the board in regards to reviewing the current standards of anesthesia delivery and the ever-present effort to increase safety in the state of Arizona for anesthesia. In the state of Arizona, oral maxillofacial surgeons have been integral in creating standards for anesthesia delivery not only for our state but across the nation. Since 1981, the oral surgeons in the state of Arizona has worked with the dental board to develop standards for evaluation and safe delivery of anesthetic gases and methods. And not only here in the state of Arizona, but many of our standards were adopted by other states and by our national organization, the American Association of Maxillofacial Surgeons. Oral surgeons in the state of Arizona take anesthesia safety very seriously. Like our medical anesthesiologists and our dental anesthesiologist colleagues, we feel vigilant adherence to patient selection, monitoring, and observation, along with ensuring physician competency through certification, testing, and office preparedness helps ensure patients are treated effectively and efficiently with minimizing their risk. We're honored to be considered an integral part of the subcommittee, and we hope that we feel our participation is paramount for a comprehensive evaluation of our current standards. We look forward to collaborative effort with the creating a safe delivery for anesthesia to all patients in the state of Arizona.
Thank you. And then it looks like we also have Mark Dotson signed in, who would like to speak. Only if you want to.
Didn't know you were that far along.
Well, I kind of jumped ahead knowing that most of the people came for this agenda item.
Sorry, I wasn't prepared. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mark Dotson with C-Scan Technologies. I'm a medical gas verifier here in the state of Arizona and New Mexico, Colorado. I wrote a brief statement here I'd like to read to your group. As the years have gone by, technology has improved in your area and profession. Primarily, procedures have been performed in an office setting rather than a surgical suite. With that being said, as an inspector and verifier of medical gas systems, it's become more difficult for me to distinguish between a Category 1, 2, and 3 as defined in NFPA 99, 2012, 15, and 18 editions. It doesn't come from the fault from any one individual, primarily, or sometimes it comes from the engineer, architect not being fully aware of the facility's original design, if it is a remodel, or a salesman also not knowing of the facility's design. In the transition from 2012 to 2015, we did dedicate a total chapter to dental sedation, Chapter 15, which covers Categories 1, 2, and 3. It has defined more applicable and safe operations that carry over from hospital and outpatient surgery centers and to help align with the sedation delivery for the patient. In short, our request is that the board consider taking on the NFPA 99 2012 to 2018, depending on the municipality or the authority has jurisdiction, follows, and use that as your construction basis for your facilities. This would include piping for the system delivery, design and construction of the gas storage room, valves sourced or main valves, alarm panels, area or master. Again, I thank you for your time in this. I know it was quick, but we are very appreciative of you looking into this matter.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I believe that is everybody that has signed in for agenda item number 5. Yes. There's quite a few more coming. You see, well, I see a bunch that say, I do not wish to speak. I will speak only.
Okay.
So if there is anybody else who would like to speak in front of the board on agenda item number 5, the Anesthesia and IV Sedation Committee, you're welcome right now to come up.
Hi, my name is Ernie. I'm president of the Arizona Academy of Pediatric Dentistry, and I'm here to vouch for Dr. Randy Lau, who applied to be one of the 4 additional members for your committee. I see Dr. Lau pretty regularly at our meetings. He's a regular member of our pediatric society, and I think he's the perfect candidate for this position. He has been part of a BODEX evaluator. He works on the Council of Clinical Affairs for the Academy of Pediatric Dentistry. And so he has a lot of experience writing policies and regulations. And he's also still a practicing pediatric dentist who is still regularly doing oral sedations, which I think is very relevant for this committee. So I just wanted to reiterate my vouching for him.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Can you just state your full name?
Sorry, my Ernest, and my last name is Nehrer, N-E-H-R-E-R.
Thank you.
Okay.
They're going to have you sign. You'll have to sign in still, even though you already spoke.
Okay.
Didn't know help you on the way.
All right. So, again, I saw one more person come in. If anybody else would like to speak on agenda item number 5, Anesthesia, IV Sedation Committee, you're welcome to come forward.
Yes. I'm William Hyman, H-E-I-M-A-N-N-D-E-S. I've been past president of our local state pediatric dental group, and I want to vouch for Dr. Randy Lau. I have known him since he has been in the Valley for many years. He is an exceptional pediatric dentist, as well as on the Council of Clinical Affairs for the National Academy of Pediatric Dentistry. So he is aware of national standards, and he can bring that to the board so that the children of Arizona are taken care of very well. So I also support him. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. So moving forward with that agenda, so a little bit of a back discussion and story, and I believe I'm representing all of the board members in this. When we had some questions just as to why we started this committee, and we had over this year many members of the public that came and spoke regarding different anesthesia things, and unfortunately during our regular board meetings, this is not really one of our regular ones, we just don't have time to sit and have a full discussion. So the board is not necessarily saying by forming this committee that everything needs to be changed and update everything, but we need to have a different forum for things to be looked at to decide, is there something that needs to be changed? And let's hear the people from our public and other specialties and professions when they have something that they're concerned concerned with, because in our forum, we don't have time to give that to people. So that is why we formed this committee. Just a reminder for any stakeholders, which any of you who came up and spoke, you are all stakeholders, so you can come to any of the committee meetings, and it will be a bit more like this as a roundtable discussion, even if you do not serve on the committee. So that was my intention for forming it, was to just have an availability for some good discussion to look forward for different things. So that being said, a reminder for the committee. We had originally formed it with 7 people, and then we decided to increase that to 11 people. So on the committee as of right now, we have 3 lay people, one being a representative from the board. We have 2 dental anesthesiologists. We did have a bit of question because one of our dental anesthesiologists is also a pediatric dentist. He is actually somebody that I know, and I reached out to his office, and he is practicing in a dental anesthesia capacity. He does only practice in a pediatric dentist capacity if he has to, but he specifically went back to school because he physically can't do that work anymore. So we have 2 dental anesthesiologists. We have 1 pediatrician who is also our board member, and we have 1 general dentist who, again, is our board member. So we are looking to expand our committee, or we have expanded our committee by 4 people. In my opinion, I would love to see 2 oral surgeons be added to the committee, 1 additional pediatrician added to the committee, and 1 other, whether it be a general dentist, a periodontist, a prosthodontist, something other. I think that that gives a fair representation of the cross-section of the community, including when we're talking voting, that we don't have 1 specialty that has a weightier vote than another specialty, and everybody can still be heard and discussions can be made, including our stakeholders. So again, I don't want to speak for you all, but that was how I felt with this. And even though I know I'm the one that gets the final say on this, or will make the final say on this, I definitely would like your all's opinion, because if I am saying something that you sway me differently on, then I'm open to hearing that. So as I started looking at the applicants, which we had a lot of additional applicants, so I'm very happy that we were able to get the word out better than the first time. The name that jumped out to me was actually, as you all said, Dr. Randy Lout was a pediatrician that I pulled forward with the name. Dr. Eddie Christensen was one of the oral surgeons. And then I am open to other suggestions for 1 additional oral surgeon and then that 4th spot as well. So how do you all feel on those names? What anything I said?
Those 2 names I agree with, and I'd like to present Randy Blasek as a 2nd oral surgeon.
Okay.
And then there's Ken Reed, who does all our anesthesia evaluations, stuff like that. Plus, he's an educator. He teaches all over with Stanley Malumed, and he's phenomenal. He's already doing our board stuff for anesthesia, so he'd be excellent at this.
I agree, and I have his name asterisked, but the only thing that I struggle with putting him on the committee is then that would put 3 dental anesthesiologists on the committee.
Isn't he a general dentist, too?
He is actually a general dentist as well, but which is
and the reason why the reason,
right, but he's not practicing with that.
Well, the reason why I think that he would be okay is because he educates general dentists in becoming certified, so he has the general dentist. He has a bias towards general dentists in order to be able to help certify them, and I think that's why he popped out for me, is because he literally teaches hundreds if not thousands of general dentists to become IV sedation certified.
My only pushback with him is I think he practices with Dr. Brady, who's already on the committee.
Okay.
And you know, I think we just want to be aware of the
totally get that. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. For me, Joe Creech, I think, would be a great addition. I mean, he's been around forever, a great pediatrician. Anthony Caputo, I know we are talking that we don't want to overly weight with dental anesthesiologists, but we don't really have any representation outside of Phoenix from what I know right now. He's based out of Tucson. I also think if we look at part of the maybe a secondary or tertiary purposes for this committee, it's you know, not necessarily to change anything, but always review safety. And
I agree.
When we're talking safety in the realm of anesthesia, peds is going to be on the top of the list, and mobile is going to be on the top of the list.
So I think we want to get as many perspectives from those realms as we can. So to me, absolutely we need a couple oral surgeons, but the dental anesthesiologists and the pediatrics, I think, make up a big representation of where we want to make sure we're honing in our safety with this. So if we did have more DAs or an additional pediatrics, I don't think it's a negative.
Okay.
Joe Creech did, huh?
Yeah, I know Joe. As far as oral surgeons, Saba Kalamshi and Vishy Broman, they both have a lot of hospital experience in addition to doing anesthesia in their offices. And it's that hospital care that, you know, getting some practitioners that are dentists or oral surgeons that have that ongoing hospital experience, I think is going to be really valuable for the committee discussions, because the way the anesthesia is being, not necessarily the technique that the anesthesia is done, but the facility itself, office versus hospital, is going to be quite different, and it'd be good to have some providers that are regularly going to the hospital to offer some insight into that.
Okay.
Now, the only concern I have is that if we have too many, not general dentists, because we have more general dentists sedation certified than we do specialists. I mean, obviously, we have fewer specialists. We have a lot more general dentists who are doing it. And if we weight it heavy, and specialists are always going to say, well, specialists should be doing this.
Sure.
And you, as a general dentist, totally appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I just don't want to have it overweighted on specialty as well.
Sure.
If we don't have enough information from a general dentist.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have a general dentist that you would recommend that was on our list? There was Dr. Snell had put one in, but as you said, he travels a bit more than working out of private practice.
Yeah.
Dr. Yildrickson is a general dentist to put in a resume.
Well, that actually was the reason why I worked with Ken Reed, because he is an advocate for general dentists doing surgeons.
And Caputo is the same way. So, I mean, maybe, you know, if we're going to look at that realm, maybe Caputo would be a better fit than Reed, only in the sense that he's based out of Tucson and has no affiliation with another member that's already on the
committee.
There isn't any other person that applied from Tucson, a general dentist? I didn't see one.
I didn't either. I didn't see many general dentists who applied. I wrote everybody down. Dr. Kenneth Scott is a general dentist, but he works in pedo. So.
Yeah, Wood Lindsay, he also travels.
I would hate to add another dental anesthesiologist just because they're from Tucson.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
Right. I mean.
And there's other, yeah. I agree.
Dr. Joshua Nayu, N-A-Y-A-U, if I can read my writing correctly.
On the same note, I kind of hate for us to have another general dentist just because...
Where they're located.
Yeah, and we're trying to search for one. I mean, you know, we can always...
Well, then, okay, then I propose that I think we have to take a vote.
Well, it's not really a vote. I just assigned this.
Okay. I propose that we take Randy Blazek and Eddie Christensen, two oral surgeons. Randy Lau,
yes.
as the pedo, and then Ken Reed.
I like that too.
So I agree with Dr. Lau. I agree with Dr. Christensen. I agree with Dr. Blazek. I am still going back and forth on Dr. Reed.
Okay, then we'll take Joe Creech.
Joe Creech would be great.
I'm struggling. I know that sounds. It sounds so bad, but this is, and which is why you all that have sat through other board meetings, why I put Mr. Goodman, who is not in attendance, and he is one of our public members on the board, I put him as the chairperson, because there's going to be so many different opinions. And I don't want any of the specialties to have any sort of that one weight, and that would throw in a third.
I understand that. However, I mean, there's 190-plus pediatric dentists in the state of Arizona. I think there's 110 oral surgeons, and I think there's 25 dental anesthesiologists.
What about general dentists?
There are a lot of general dentists.
Wait, I mean, would it be appropriate to talk about the one committee member who... wrote in about being taken off, because if we were going to do that, then we could maybe add another Peter Dunn. We could add Joe Creech. We could look at adding somebody else.
And that's a great idea.
Yeah.
So we did have, did you all see in the paperwork, that Joseph Rodriguez, who is a CRNA, nurse anesthetist, public member, he asked to be removed.
So he asked to be removed, and he's not here, I don't think, right, Joseph Rodriguez? So he asked not necessarily to be removed, but
to
be replaced by, so he works with another guy, I think they're based out of Flagstaff, and I think he's the only CRNA on the committee, and he works for somebody else who also submitted a CD.
Yes.
And so he basically supplanted his boss. So he was usurping some sort of authority because he was getting placed on a committee that his boss did not get put on. So he wanted to give his seat up so that his boss could be on it. So I think he's comfortable on it, but it's still your decision on if you want to keep him on it. But I think he was only giving it up.
Right, not to put deference
to this.
He's such a humble person.
And he said, if you all saw his letter, that his boss, which now I know his boss, I didn't know that, but does more in the dental offices than he does, so he thought he would be a better fit for the committee. And that his boss's name is Ali Baghi, B-A-G-H-A-I, is who he was giving that up for.
But if we're struggling because, and I agree with you, to not have a specialty weighted, and you have a CRNA that is potentially willing to step out or we have the opportunity to take him out, maybe it's better to have another dental specialist on instead of the CRNA.
As long, and they made a good point when they came in, is that they were being locked out of the ability to, and I think that they are equally as qualified as many people.
Absolutely. I work with some weekly.
Right.
Yeah.
And as long as they're not locked out of it, because they want to just put in the game.
Yeah, sure. And honestly, I think right now they have the ability to come in. I can't imagine that being changed going into an office. You know, they have the ability to come into dental offices and provide treatment. The issue is more on the access side, that access won't credential them. And, you know, so I don't think committee board is going to lock anybody out. I think it's more of an access issue, insurance issue.
And I think that was their main driving thing.
Yeah.
They wanted to be on it because they feel like they've been locked out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And ultimately, I mean, we got another like 50-some CVs. People are not still going to be happy with the outcome of even today's meeting, but everybody should still feel welcome at the table to come and present information. They just want to vote on the committee with the recommendation to the board. And then ultimately, the board make a decision based on those recommendations, but nobody should feel like they're not part of it simply because they're not on the committee. Right.
Can I make a comment real quick? I don't know if it's again or not. You know, I would say that.
Can I interrupt?
Oh, yeah.
Can you come up? Because it's recorded, and so it has to be on a mic. That way we won't get picked up.
And your name. My name is Bobby Yang. I'm a pediatric dentist. And, you know, my comment here is that I think that having a lot more dental anesthesiologists and maybe a pediatric dentist on the board would be great, just because most of us do see a lot of kids with anesthesiologists coming into the office. And I think that in the state of Arizona, most providers that are getting put to sleep our kids are getting put to sleep. So I think that having another one of those coming in and being on the board is probably sort of better than another general dentist. Because we are seeing most of the kids under IV sedation or general anesthesia in the office. So I think having one of those on the board would be beneficial.
Yeah, I have to agree with Dr. Yang. The rate of decay that I've been seeing since I've been practicing has gone way up, and I'm putting way more kids to sleep than I'm not, but I'm bringing an anesthesiologist in, or I'm doing oral sedation way more than I ever did before, just in the past 5 years. I mean, 42% of kids nationally have decay ages 2 to 11, but that's like 4 out of 10 kids. And so we have to put, and a lot of these children you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So we have to put them to sleep.
Well, it's hard to say that most of ours, because oral surgeons are going to say, well, every one of mine gets to sleep because they've got four wisdom teeth,
right.
Or you've built your whole practice on that impression.
Right.
So we all
special needs.
It's,
right?
It's
right.
Like if you worked at an auto shop,
right.
All cars are broken.
Right.
So
well,
you see a lot of kids put to sleep,
but are more kids being put to sleep than adult dentists, or I mean adults? I don't think so.
I think there's more kids.
And maybe in oral surgery, but how many dental anesthesiologists are going into those offices to do?
But if you did take the sheer number of people that are put to sleep every year versus, yeah.
Are you just talking dental wise?
Dental wise, you're have more adults being put to sleep every year, not per capita, not in every office, but there are just more adults being put to sleep
as
the kids.
No matter what, I'm not willing to put more specialties on the board, on the committee. I think it will be, no matter what, again, people are going to be upset even with that, because some specialties may feel that there should be more representation. And I hear everything that you all are saying, and it's a very important, and kids, like we all know, can go south quicker than adults can.
Yeah.
So, but is it more important with that? Every facet of anesthesia is going to end up being...
Well, I think that's a really important point for the committee, too, is to determine the safety of children.
Yes.
You know, that's where the pedodontists are going to step in. But as long as there's equal representation, then obviously the pedodontists are going to be the experts in that field, and when you start talking to these, you're going to defer to them. You're going to start talking about medical-based, you're going to defer to, you know, all these other people, and then you're like, okay, what about everyone else that is IV sedation or oral sedation certified? Then that starts getting general dentists, and, you know, but you've got to be able to make sure that everyone's equally represented and it's not weighted heavy. But you would be the experts on the committee in your subgroups.
Right. So
and then,
the ones that I for sure am, so we'll start with who we already have. Mr. Goodman, the chair. Dr. Beanstalk, pedodontist, a board member. Dr. Hero, general dentist, who specializes in sedation, a board member. Dr. Jonathan German, who is a medical anesthesiologist as one of our public members. Dr. Brownstein is a public member, and he is a dental anesthesiologist. Yes, he is also a pedodontist, but he is practicing mainly as a dental anesthesiologist. I am actually okay with Mr. Rodriguez giving up his spot because I put on there a CRNA. I want to keep that on there. So I am okay with Ali Baghi changing for his position, the CRNA.
Baghi.
B-A-G-H-A-I. Dr. Brady, who is a dental anesthesiologist and a public member. So that was our original seven, substituting out Joseph Rodriguez. Then going down to our additional four. So my three that I would say I am for sure on. Dr. Randy Lout, a pedodontist, which makes two. Dr. Eddie Christensen, an oral surgeon. And Dr. Blasek, an oral surgeon, which makes two there. So again, I'm going to keep that one last spot that I am okay going with a general dentist, or even if we put, there's a periodontist, Dr. Brian Harvey, there is a prostodontist, Dr. Ernest DeBreo, that one other spot to fill with one of those. So again, not to say that I don't think that the specialties wouldn't have important things, but I don't want one specialty to be weighted heavier than another. Even if that means that a general dentist only has one general dentist representation and a periodontist.
I think it makes a lot of sense.
In our perio office, we sedate every day as well. Yes.
Yeah.
Would you mind coming up to the podium, please, and stating your name as well?
Dr. Eddie Christensen, I'm an oral and maxillofacial surgeon. Thank you for allowing us to come here and speak. It's a very important issue for everybody involved and our specialty as well. So we're here to help and to move things along in the right direction. I know that it came up about hospital-based anesthesia. I've taken level one trauma call at Banner Good Samaritan Hospital, which is now Banner University, for 6+ years, and I've also been at Banner Desert Medical Center and Cardinals Children's Hospital, where I take a level one patient trauma call. I've done that for the last 10 years, see a lot of trauma. I take 1 week a month, and for over a year and a half I took it 2 weeks out of the month I covered the trauma center. So I see a lot of trauma, I take care of a lot of kids, and so as far as the hospital based questions, I'd be happy to weigh in on those when that comes up. One other, did Heath Snell submit his CV?
He did.
Okay. I think he's a fine applicant. And he'd have my, as a, if you're looking for a general dentist that provides sedation for patients, I think he would be a great consideration.
Maybe he was one I actually had considered that we had talked about.
Well, maybe that's where to go then.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
That will give me just 1 second to find his CV.
Okay, because he was actually, I had him listed for a general dentist when I was reviewing it.
My only comment on him, but I mean, I think if we need another general dentist, he's the natural choice. Was he does mobile IV conscious sedation, which is kind of in the realm of a mobile anesthesiologist, which is not able to go deep. So I don't have another representation that is really for the rest of the general dental community, but it makes more sense to not overweight the committee with any one specialty. He may be a good choice.
And being a mobile person too may be interesting too, because you're going to have to start figuring out these mobile permits.
Yeah, and he'll be able to comment on a lot of different facilities that he sees and the differences in the offices.
And he does do over 500 a year, and so some general dentists do two a month,
right?
This is all he does.
Sure.
So.
Okay, I agree. So he will fill that last position. Do I need to state that again?
Yes.
Okay. So on our committee, Nick Goodman will be the chair, Dr. Lisa Beanstock from the board, Dr. Anthony Hero from the board, Dr. Jonathan Germain, a public member, Dr. Jeff Brownstein, a public member, Ali Baghi, a public member, Dr. Jason Brady, a public member, Dr. Randy Lau, a public member, Dr. Eddie Christensen, a public member, Dr. Blasek, a public member, and Dr. Heath Snell, a public member. And then again, any stakeholder is welcome to come to these meetings. It will be more of a discussion that people will have a round table. There, it may even be agendized as far as different topics to talk about when they are there, so everybody can be heard. That's what we want, everything to be looked at. Again, this is going to have a lot of different subjects and a lot of different opinions, which is why Mr. Goodman is going to be our chair, because he is one step back out of dentistry. He is not in dentistry, and so I think it's good to have a chair being somebody that does not have something that would be slated for that high of an opinion on something, one side or another. We're looking at discussions. It will come back to the board, and then we will discuss to see what steps we take from there. But this will give a forum over however long the committee thinks to move whatever subjects they have forward. Any other discussion? Questions?
Can I add something real quick?
Yeah.
So one of the three subcommittees that you have assigned has already met. It was the Botox and Dermal Irrigators. And so this is more for the public so that they can anticipate what the first meeting would look like. Essentially, it's kind of a logistical meeting. And they dove deep and got basically, I think, maybe finished with Dr. Harmon will speak more on this later. So I think right now as staff, we don't have the ability to post like a schedule of when these meetings will be, but all the committee members will get it as soon as the first meeting, and then that's it. That's the only thing we'll post on the website, and then after that, they'll decide how many times they're going to meet monthly, if monthly, maybe every other month. But that first meeting will kind of be placing dates on the calendar, so it's kind of a logistical meeting. They may get more in depth, but I just wanted the folks that are present to know. They're invited to come to any of these, so we'll post them on the website.
And one other thing as well, when we expanded the this committee. This was specifically an expansion that we wanted to put more of the dental community on this committee. The committee already has, it is 11 people. We as a dental board are 11 people. Our dental board only has 3 public members. I was not willing to put more public members, just like our dental board only has 3 public members, 2, and then a business entity. And I didn't think that our committee should have extra public as well. I thought it should be, again, a cross-section of the valley, just like our dental board is as well. So that was why I did limit that to the dental profession and not going. I know Medical Gas was hoping, but I was not willing to put more public members on that committee. So they have, I'm sure, things that they're going to be talking about as well coming in, and that will be discussed at the committee level, just as any stakeholder will be able to. Okay? Anything else on this agenda? All right. Well, for that agenda, because I know there are a lot of people that were here for that, thank you all for coming. Of course, you are welcome to stay for the rest of the meeting, but we thought we would get that over with first. So if you did not want to stay, you did not have to. So now we're going to backtrack to agenda item number 4A, application for licensing of dental hygienist, Marcia Reister. And I know she's here.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen of the Arizona Dental Board.
Excuse me, just a minute before you start. Do I need to swear her in?
Basically, just to kind of review where we were last time, it's not set for any formal hearing or interview,
okay.
So
we don't have to.
It would just be
okay.
Allowing her to comment.
Perfect. Thank you.
What's important?
Just making sure. Before you proceed.
Yeah. Good afternoon to you all. I'm Marcia. I have flown in from Michigan, where I'm working right now, to be here for the meeting, because this is a huge deal for me, as my husband and I just bought a house in McAdoo. I feel I am one of the most professional and effective dental hygienists you will meet. I've been practicing full-time since 2001, 15 years within the same office in Michigan. 4 years in Kentucky, while we were helping my husband's mom while she was sick. I love all of my patients and treat them as family members. I enjoy taking the time it takes to explain details, as it is satisfying to me to see patients happy and healthy. I have 2 letters of recommendation with me from 2 credible doctors that I worked full-time with, Dr. Ellen Curry and Dr. Dennis Long. And I could have retained 2 more recommendation letters from 2 younger dentists who would also say positive remarks. But I hope you understand I had like a week to get ready for this, as my husband got the letter on the 8th and then the meeting was on the 15th. So I hope you understand. As you have in front of you, I have no negative marks on my character noted in the professional self-inquiry, and also have attained the Arizona Healthcare Professional Fingerprint Card. I appreciate you guys putting me back on the agenda, and I would love to answer any questions that you have regarding my history.
Thank you. And does anybody have any questions? Okay, so with that being said, I would like to make a motion that we go into executive session, please, for legal advice.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? We'll be right back.
We got 3 meetings. We
got signing out. Just
Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Reister? Any discussion? Hardy, I would make a motion that we grant licensure to Ms. Reister.
Tomorrow seconds.
We have
you're going to do that, you have to rescind your prior vote.
Rescind? Okay, so then I would make a motion that we rescind our prior vote to deny.
I can do it as part.
Okay, and then I would make the continuing that motion that then we also grant licensure to Ms. Reister.
Tomorrow seconds.
So we have a motion and a second on the table. Any discussion? We have a roll call, please.
Purdy?
Aye.
Taylor?
Aye.
Beanstalk?
Aye.
Bird?
Aye.
Harmon?
Aye.
Hero?
Aye.
And Marl?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to Arizona.
Yes, yay.
Have a safe flight trip back.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I wanted you guys to know how important it was to me. And I know it's, I've made a couple of mistakes in my life, but unfortunately,
we all have
made them. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for all.
Okay, agenda item number 4B, review the investigation file and proposed board order for number 12018-00147, Dr. Minsiok Kang. Okay, so in our packet from our former interview, we have what was proposed for the board order.
After your informal, you voted to offer, not to offer, but to issue this order. And actually, looking at it, I've got to fix it because it says consent agreement. It's not a consent agreement, so that would have to be redacted and take that out. This was essentially...
I see it as proposed board order.
The...
On page 31.
Yeah, you're going to put it in. Okay.
So
So based upon going through the transcript and what the board discussion was, I drafted the proposed order. I just wanted to make sure that it's accurate as far as what the board's understanding was, what your findings and conclusions were, to make sure I didn't misinterpret something.
And I was going to leave that a lot to you myself, Dr. Hero, with everything that you brought up during that interview.
Reading through it, I think it looks accurate.
Okay. And then, do we need to do separate motions for the findings of fact?
You already did that last time.
Okay.
Basically, if you could just, if there are any changes, anything's accurate, it would just be a motion to approve the proposed order and issue it.
Okay.
It doesn't need to be roll call. It's just a voice vote.
Okay.
One of the questions that we never mentioned priors. Does that need to be brought up?
I didn't pick up anything on the transcript about there being a discussion of priors.
No, there wasn't.
Okay, and the priors would only come into effect as far as to enhance the discipline board's
So should we bring that up then so it'll be on the record?
If there's no priors, you don't need to address and indicate there's no priors.
I think there is prior.
Yeah, there's one or two of them, I think.
At least two.
So is the discipline that you did based upon, in part based upon the priors? Because my understanding, if they weren't the exact same conduct, they were different conduct.
Right, it's different conduct,
To the extent it was similar conduct, that would justify the change in order.
Well, that's the one thing I can't remember if it was or not. Dr. Hero, do you remember?
Priors were in similar nature to our order here. They were not. It wasn't. I don't think it was clinical.
All right. Okay. Good enough. Thank you.
Okay. Any more discussion or a motion?
So, what's the wording?
It would, if the documents are agreeable to the board to approve, the document is drafted and then drafted.
So, Morrow proposes that we adopt the proposed board order for Minsiok Kang as it is drafted. Direct staff to issue order, said order.
Taylor seconds.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay, agenda item number 6, Botox and Derma Filler Committee recommendation. Now we do have Mr. Earle.
He's outside.
Yes, and he does wish to speak on it. Are you going to grab him? Thank you. You're up.
I sort of want to hear what your recommendation is before I...
Okay, perfect. That's no problem. We'll defer to Dr. Herman.
Mr. Robinson, did you want to start?
Yes. Okay, so the committee met about a couple weeks ago, something like that. So, and they have recommended, they met and talked, I think they may not even have to meet again depending on the outcome of today's recommendation to the board. Fortunately or unfortunately, there's seven of us here. Of us, as I just threw myself as a board member. The next public member. And so they made a recommendation to, I don't know, I don't want to step on your toes, but essentially to kind of expand, and I'll let him, Dr. Harmon, speak more on this, but to expand the practice for both dentists and hygienists in this realm of Botox and dermal fillers. We, as staff, have already tried to set up a meeting with Dr. Cobb. I've met her a couple times. I've known her for a while, but not in this capacity. And, well, I've run into her a few times at association events and other things, and we have just not matched our calendars. And in fact, I think she's still in Portugal, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, she's back.
She's back. So I'm assuming we're going to have a meeting. I was grateful that this meeting happened before the meeting with her. So depending on that, I think that we can talk to Dr. Cobb to see if she wants to help in this and run some legislation. So with that, I'll pass it on.
Great, thanks. So we got together, and the first thing that interested me were there were no members of the public from the profession, from any specialty, anything else that was opposed to the proposition of expanding the scope of practice for dentists and dental hygienists in the state of Arizona to be able to clearly, in our verbiage of antiquated rule or statute or whatever it happened to be, to make it just plain that it's okay for dentists and dental and now to add dental hygienists in Arizona to administer these things. We're following other states. You know, Nevada right next to us allows dentists and dental hygienists. It's, you know, the most popular course at the ADA, you know, dental convention every year in midwinter. It's been taught in Arizona to dentists since 2012, I believe, off the top of my head. So basically what we're trying to, what the idea was, because there was kind of that gray area of everything where it was, is to just make sure there's no gray area anymore, right? So, and I think to expand on that thought, I think it would be a great thing for the dental board to take charge to really, and I want to set up another committee, so.
I hear you.
But we need to, things in dentistry change, you know, and we need to make certain that we are paying attention and seeing what our language is in our statutes and our scope of practice. This language and all these things so that we continue to stay up and we, you know, continue to protect the public of Arizona. You know, that's really where a lot of this stuff is with Botox and dermal fillers, as the highly educated professionals that we are, to be able to administer this stuff in a safe fashion for the public in Arizona. So basically the bottom line is that we went through a number of different changes as far as trying to get exactly how that scope of practice would read, if you will. We had I guess it's not important to go through all of the different steps that we went through to get to where we ended, but the bottom line is that we were going to change ARS 32-1202, which refers to the scope of practice, and also it is for the hygienists. I believe. So in that scope of practice, it basically the hygienist kind of follows, you know, the dentist because it's under direct supervision. So, but it's prescribing, dispensing, or using drugs other than accepted dental therapeutic purpose or for other medically indicated supportive therapy in conjunction with managing the patient's need in conjunction with the scope of practice as referred to in ARS 32-1202. And then we added later, we made an addendum to that to administer botulism toxin A and dermal fillers after the phrase discolorations or consecrations. And that we wanted to also add in the verbiage of the oral facial complex, so that, you know, there was a brief concern the way that we first brought up the language that it just meant you could do Botox or dermal fillers anywhere in the body, right? So, you know, you've got a tremor in your hand, you know, and, you know, not okay, right? So you're still on the scope of practice for dentistry. So wanted to make certain that everything we got down there was black and white, was straightforward and those kind of things. So that is the recommendation from the committee to the board, is that we go ahead and do that. And so with the purpose of making a motion that we direct staff and to move forward in the process of rule writing, changing laws, those kind of things, as well as us. So that's the intent of the committee, but obviously, you know, any discussion.
So just to avoid ambiguity in question, does the dentist have to take an approved course? Do they have to be certified?
So, great question. We went into detail about that, and that was one of the things that we discussed at our last board meeting, right? That we really, and it's really important to me as well, like, you know, exactly what we wanted. And so we're going down that path of really kind of nailing down exactly what those requirements were until there was an objection, and it was a very valid objection, and that is that, well, what about implants? What about a dental laser? Right? Do we have that exactly spelled out? How much continuing education you need to place dental implants? Do we have exactly what you need to use a dental laser?
But you have a laser certification,
right? Absolutely. Right. So we could do, right, but the board doesn't require you to submit that certification to the board before you start using it. So that is the same thought going into the Botox and dermal fillers.
I don't think that's necessarily a license, like a sedation license, but as long as you can prove, exactly, if there's an issue, that you've been duly trained.
Exactly. Yep. As we do with any other those advanced things that you don't get with your dental degree or your hygiene degree.
This is Dr. Taylor. So when we say train, what does that mean?
That's a great question, but it's exactly the same that it would be with implants or with a laser. I'm a general dentist. I don't place implants. I'm a general dentist. I use a dental laser, but I got my certification. You know, not once, twice, but that doesn't matter either. But, you know, as a professional, you are required to dot your I's and cross your T's, and if you don't, there's consequences, and that's why we have a board.
Yeah, so with this, if we're going to allow dentists, dental hygienists, dental therapists, there's got to be some type of certificate that they've been qualified to do that. Because someone can say, "Yeah, I have a certificate," and then don't prove it other than they have a certificate. Like what happened with previous, what we had to go through. We need to verify.
The same thing with the dental laser, right?
Yeah.
So you have to get certified, right?
Okay.
Somebody can say, "Well, yeah, I'm certified," and they didn't get their certificate. Well, you know, if you didn't get your certificate, there's a price to pay, right? But you know, it's. I mean, that's the thing we have.
Could they be certified through a medical route, or does it have to be dental related? That's the next question. Because there are medical classes on Botox nerve fillers. Mm-hmm. And then there are dental classes on Botox nerve fillers. Do we want to require that it's a dental class that needs to be done, or is it a medical class?
Sure, seems like all the information would be...
I just want to eliminate...
It would be better, right?
I want to eliminate any ambiguity.
I know that
because we're not specifically saying we need a certificate like for sedation, right?
Yeah.
Then we don't have to spell that out.
But right? if you have a dental laser, you do have to have a certification.
Yeah. And so where is the rules about what that certification?
I thought that they had to be associated with ALD or some other dental laser group that has provided the 8 hours of CT.
Why would it necessarily be spelled out between the two? Because, for instance, I went in and had Botox done on my forehead, and the nurse who gave it to me said, "You're a dental hygienist? How come you can't do this? You've had way more training on the head and neck than I ever had."
And I'm not arguing either way.
But if I went to a medical class that she went to, how come I still couldn't perform what she does? You know what I mean? In that part of it, I don't know that there would need to be a specification, because if I went to the same class that she went to and she did it in my forehead, then I could administer it as well.
But staff has got to be able to answer that question too and say,
right,
you have to have an XYZ certification, or you have to take any class of any kind dealing with this. You know.
From a safety perspective, has anyone ever died from Botox or derma fillers? Because sedation makes sense, because we're talking life and death, right? So if there haven't been... If
they're
the adverse,
temporary.
Okay.
They're not even permanent, right? So it's not an irreversible thing either, right? So for dermal fillers, you can give hyaluronidase and it's gone right now, right? With the Botox, you don't have that, but you would just have to wait.
It might look a little wonky. If
right.
Good job.
You might have a tiny eyebrow.
Not that you present. Let's hear from you. Let's hear your referral. Okay, I think you're jumping way ahead of yourselves. First, let me explain that under Arizona state law, whenever you're going to expand the scope of practice, it requires that you file a Sunrise application.
That's not true.
With the legislature. If you're going to expand the scope of practice for a dental hygienist, then I think that you may have a need to go through a Sunrise process in order to do that.
Can I speak to that real quick before you can interject? So if an outside entity is trying to change your scope of practice, and this goes for any community, if it's an outside entity trying to change the scope of practice of an existing board, then you have to go through this process. If it's your entity, so you guys are the dental board, you don't have to go through a Sunrise practice. Am I correct?
That's my understanding.
Okay. Are we changing our scope or just clarifying?
We're adding to it.
Here's the restatement factor.
Right.
Okay. So you got two elements here. One is the definition of the practice of dentistry, which what I believe you're suggesting is that you amend that section of the statute to be able to include the administration of Botox and dermal fillers. That's one way to deal with it. Still doesn't deal with the fact that you've got a provision of unprofessional conduct that says that it is impermissible for a dentist to administer medication for a non-dental purpose. Okay, so we haven't put our heads, you'd have to put your heads together to figure out exactly what the fix is to be able to address that. And we certainly are willing to work with the board to do that. I'm just questioning how it's going to look politically at the legislature to have the board come to the legislature and say we want to do Botox. It just, you may get some political pushback from that if it was the association doing it. It might be different. However, given the fact that apparently there is a provision of law that allows you to not have to file a Sunrise application, and I just think that this is going to have to be handled delicately across the street. And
we're not certainly opposed to expanding things. I think there's huge opportunity here, and who better than dentists and dental hygienists who are well versed in head and neck anatomy to be able to do it. And I also am impressed with the idea that you're sort of trying to limit it to the orofacial area. These are complicated, and it's going to take some scut work to try to get the exact language that's going to work. You're going to have to find a sponsor, and you're going to have to work the bill that's going to fall on Ryan. Now, the association could fall in line and say, this will be part of our legislative agenda to support the board's initiative to do that, and that might be the better way going forward.
One thing that may help, too, is we just attended Ryan, Christina, and I, AABB, talking to the other boards and big forums on what's going on in their states.
Right.
So with that, we are able, which is on the agenda, to bring forward what other states are doing. So not to say we're doing it, keeping up with the Joneses, but there are other states who have expanded different things, which would be a reason why we as a board could come in and say, sure, this is why we're doing it.
Yeah, now what you may want to do is structure your legislation in a way that gives you the ability to delegate the administration of Botox and dermal fillers to a dental hygienist and have the board prescribe the rules under which that delegation would happen and what kind of training would be associated with it. Generally, you would do that in rule. You wouldn't put that in statute to identify what kind of training you want to see. And then you have people like your guy that's on your committee who came from Ohio, who was doing it in Ohio. You're going to have to figure a way to grandfather people who have been credentialed to do it before. In your comparison to the administration of lasers, for example, there is sort of a catch-all section of the statute that deals with the use of emerging scientific technologies. And it was written loosely because they knew that there would be changes that would happen periodically as new things would develop. And it basically says that the use of new scientific technologies and delegating those to a dental hygienist requires that, yes, they have training under certain circumstances, and I think your rules identify how that training has to be done. But it also requires that the dentist have at least equal to or more than the training than the dental hygienist has. So it was written in a relatively loose way to be able to accommodate. So, like, oftentimes we get questions about laser certification classes, and we just did a hands-on laser class at the office maybe 2 months ago or so. We had about 20 or 30 people where we brought in pig's jaws, and it was just, hands-on stuff. It smelled lovely. But those regs were written in a loose way to accommodate the fact that technology is going to change all the time. So you don't have specific requirements for things because you can't possibly, as a board, keep up with those things. You've got to write it in a way that makes it flexible enough to be able to adapt to new circumstances as they arrive. So suffice it to say, the association certainly will help carry the ball on this. We look for the opportunity to sort of help you craft the language if we need be, and start talking to folks across the street. Respectfully, Dr. Cobb probably doesn't want to do bills that relate to dentistry because it puts her in a position where she's got a bit of a conflict of interest. So you're going to have to find a sponsor, which is going to be interesting.
There's a few of the other members that are totally different to her because it's a dental bill. Nobody right now has felt comfortable until Dr. Cobb even hears about it. And it's probably better that this meeting happened before that kind of a discussion, but you know, she'll have an indication of who she thinks. I think Bartow would be open to it on the House side.
Okay.
So I don't know.
just a couple of points to Mr. Earl's comments. My understanding from our committee meeting is that we missed the Sunrise application for this year. It was November 1st, right? So if we, obviously, however it works best to work through the system, which I'm certainly no expert, right? Whatever consensus there is, right, makes sense. And also that the legislatures like the Sunrise application, right? I mean, you don't have to do it, but they kind of prefer to get that. It's their little heads up of what's coming, right? And then secondly, crafting the language, we were, I don't want to say warned, I don't know if that's the right word, but that's what we were told. Like, even though we were coming up with this verbiage to put in the scope of practice, I think, Brian, you told us, you said, you can word it however you want, and then we're going to get told how it can be worded, right? So we've got rule writers and, all these kind of people. So even though we're coming up with certain terms or something like that, that's not how it's going to end up.
But the process. You identify a sponsor. The sponsor will instruct you to open a bill folder, and then legislative council will help to draft the language. Oftentimes, you get the basic framework of what you're looking for, and they'll put it in the proper form.
Gotcha.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Earl.
And I can't guarantee who's going to be in this chair.
No, you're going to
have 26 days from now.
Again, thank you for your service for many years.
Yes, absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Okay.
Dr. Harvey, if I could interject too, on the topic of education and how much education is required and certificates, based on the current atmosphere, the committee decided not to add in a layer to say you have, I mean, ultimately, if somebody, a complainant, complains and comes before the board, then the board would then ask, are you certified even to give dermal fillers and Botox? As you ask, are you certified to do lasers and speaking from a clinician. So they anticipated this, they had a long conversation on it, but ultimately to add some sort of regulation in kind of a deregulation atmosphere is probably not the wisest thing, especially if you go across the street.
I'm all for deregulating things. As long as we have made sure all the questions are going to be answered. And so we got to make it. We had the same problem with Rev last week on determining what we accept and what we don't accept, because we did not state specifically certain things. And then we had to come back again to figure that out. So I don't want to have to go back in 2 years and just go through all the stuff that happens across the street because we didn't put something right in or something. But I'm all for deregulating. I love that idea. But I want to make sure that we answer the questions.
Yeah, and again, today's the first step. Today is not saying it's law, right? It's just this directing staff and the board to move forward in the process.
Is that a motion?
Yeah, sure. That's what we're doing. So I wrote it down. I'd like to make a motion that the board approve the botulism toxin A and dermal filler committee recommendation that we change the scope of practice for dentists and dental hygienists and direct staff, as well as the board to make necessary changes through legislation and or rule writing.
Hardy seconds. So a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
Motion carries, one opposed. Dr. Taylor. All right, agenda item number 7, investigator/internal consultant position. And we have Mr. Earl signed in on this as well.
Okay. Let me see. So I'm going to speak off the cuff. I was going to add something in, and I just realized we didn't add it in. So this board, as you know, is losing Dr. Palmer as your chief investigator. He's a contract investigator. His contract expires December 21st or 22nd. So, and we've known this. In April, this board, I wish Mr. Diana was here to opine on this as well, but kind of at his direction, and then the board adopted kind of what his principles were to hire an employee dentist versus a contract dentist as the chief investigator. we work with multiple consultants, about 50 or so, that, especially like if there's a specialty that's involved in a complaint, then Dr. Palmer doesn't get involved in it, or the DOJ, he helps write up the report, but that's about it. So essentially, this board then charged the staff to move forward with an employee hiring to max out at 29 hours a week. This is not meant to be disparaging at all of our predecessors and where we've come, but through us being new, we just have a fresh perspective and a fresh eye on everything, including the budget. A couple of things that we've, and I won't spend a ton of time on this, because I don't want it to sound disparaging and that I have some sort of axe to grind, because I don't. But ultimately, this board, so you have to go through a legislative process through OSPB, JOBC, and all of this to get an approved budget on an appropriation. Because we're a 90-10 board, we operate, we have 100% revenue, and we operate on 90% of the 100% revenue that we receive. 10% of it goes to the general fund. So all the money that you use to operate this agency is money that you, as a dental board, receive in revenue from licensee fees, renewals, and other things related to dental practice. Your appropriation for the past, I'll say 5 years, has been about $1.2 million. Your fund balance is around $5 million. With a fund balance that high, Kevin can probably attest to this, that it's right for a suite, and they would come in and take probably half. Right now, the economy in Arizona is strong. That's not likely going to happen. But it, as long as if it dips, we're going to be the first ones that come first. Dentists, hygienists, dental therapists in the future aren't going to like to see a sweep of money because they feel like it's a double taxation because they pay taxes for a general fund and then they pay license fees that now get swept to go also to a general fund to cover a budget deficit or something. So $1.2 million is what we've been appropriated. We've spent, on average, $122,000 or so under the total appropriation, which means we've reverted $120,000 roughly back to the dental work fund, which just increases the fund. Going through the budget in writing, you have to write a budget in a year in advance, which is sometimes awful to work under because we just wrote a 21 budget and we're still on 19. So it's hard, and then other things are raised around you. So what happened was, what we've recognized is the max payout to a contract employee at, I'll say, $53 an hour, which is what the dental board suggested would be the price for an investigator, chief investigator, $53 an hour at a max of 29 hours a week would be around $79,000 a year. And that's the total payout. That would be the total payout for a contract employee. If you hire, I'm mixing my words, sorry, for a contractor would be $79,000. For an employee, you have to factor in everything else. Health insurance, medical and dental, vision, retirement, Social Security, all of that, and it's called, we call it ERE, which is employer-related expense. So the total ERE is generally, or roughly about 40%, 45% of the total salary paid out. So 40% of that, $79,000, is around $32,000. So it increases the total pay to an employee on staff as an investigator. So instead of paying $79,000 at 29 hours a week, you'd be roughly paying you could pay up to $111,000. So we as staff wanted to bring these numbers back to you because I don't know that we had these numbers to give to you in April. And I wish Goodman was here, Nick Goodman, because these are questions that I think he had. And I'm happy to have a conversation with him later. But as staff, I can't make the decision and override what you guys did, but we thought instead of going, so today, the main reason why we had the meeting today was to expand the Anesthesia and Sedation Committee. In addition to that, because of the employee going through that, you guys selected four people that you wanted to interview. That was also going to happen today. So maybe some of you guys will be happy that that's not happening, so we'll be back sooner than we thought. And even if you decide to go that route, that still won't happen today. We'll still have to do that. But you guys are the fiduciaries of the money, and I know that some of you said that you hadn't seen a budget in several years. And these are some of the things that you should see. There's more information that I don't think is probably relevant to give today about the budget. The budget is not in good condition. We're operating now, starting July 1st of this year, we are operating on a budget that was submitted in August of 2018 for fiscal year 2020. Same request, $1.2 million. We're likely going to overspend, and there's a ton of reasons why, and Seth will stop me before I even get too much further because this isn't really that conversation. But we have met almost daily across the street with people from the Appropriations Committee, OSPB, the Governor's Office, and GOVC to talk about the condition of the budget, because really you should be operating probably more closer to a $1.5 million budget, which actually dips into the balance that you guys have already. The balance is strong, it's continuing to stay strong, and it will continue likely to be strong even with a $1.5 million appropriation. So with all of that information, I wanted to arm you with everything and the knowledge of the budget, the difference between a contract and an employee. One other thing on the contract, I think the main focus on the employee was that the board, they just wanted more consistency with regard to the investigative reports that you're receiving. And you felt that as an employee, it would be easier to manage, either at a staff level with Christina and myself and Miriam looking at all these reports versus a contract. All of that can happen even with a contract employee. And for those that are present that wanted this position, you're probably not going to like this next thing I said, but as an employee, it's like 101 things you have to do. So if you guys aren't happy and you want to terminate that investigator, we have to go through 101 hurdles to get through a termination, and then there's all kinds of grievance steps, and it's a night. So this,
that's with them being an employee.
As an employee, as a contract, you just say, contract's over, keep it up, and you start over. So it's a simpler process. If you're not happy, you just tear up the contract and move on.
So could we at this point revote and make it, because like you said when you brought this, you had brought it to my attention, I said, well, let's put this on the agenda because none of us want to operate in the red, right? And that's, our budget is set short of them allowing us to take more money from our own money, which is funny. But anyways, so can we just do a new vote to change this from being an employee status to a contract status?
Yeah, so that's essentially why I put it on the agenda, or Heather, sorry, Ms. Hardy asked me to put it on the agenda so that you guys could make a decision based on all the, and being armed with all of the information that you likely weren't armed with in April. And if you still have the same decision, I believe that we'll still be able to operate in 20 for this fiscal year and stay in the black. It's narrow, but we'll stay in the black by like 500 bucks, which is crazy. Because normally, if you want a healthy enough budget, everybody wants a reversion back to your budget, but it's like 3 to 5%. $5,000 is like less than 1%. So it's not, I wouldn't say it's unhealthy, but it's cautious.
Just to recap, though, Dr. Palmer is currently contracted. He's not an employee, right? Right. So we'd just be staying status quo. If we did a contract, we wouldn't be taking something away.
Right, exactly. It's the same. You'd be operating exactly the same way now. And maybe it's kind of a misnomer from before, you thought that you didn't have enough control because it was a contract employee, which is why you wanted somebody on staff. I don't know. I wasn't here prior to, so I don't know what led to the reasoning why. So, but you actually have the exact same control.
So we'd have to revise it, sending out information that's going to be contracted, not employee, and then people may back out of that.
Yeah, that's my concern, right, is that we're going to lose some candidates because they won't get benefits, they won't do all the other things.
Right. It's very possible.
And that, I'd hate to lose qualified candidates as well. They're going to work really well with us.
Do we have enough room in the budget to up the average hourly, keep it as contract pay to compensate for the applicants that have already sent their resumes in thinking they were going to get benefits.
So it's, so yes and no, yes, because there's that play of $32,000 annual. And it doesn't have to be 29 hours a week. That's the max under the contract or employee that, that it would allow based on our budget. So, which makes, continues to keep them as a part-time. So part-time as an employee, you still get the benefits if you're working X amount of hours. And so this would fit no matter what as an employee. We could continue to operate under, we could even keep it as an employee if that's the direction the board wants to go, but I would say that we'd want to probably cap it to between 20 and 25 hours for the remainder of this fiscal year. To give you an idea, Dr. Palmer on average works about 20 hours a week, sometimes less. So I think but somebody new, maybe a little more hours just to get comfortable with what they're doing. So he's less than that right now. But somebody newer may want to work up to the 20-hour one to full, you know, to reach the full potential of the amount of money that they could earn. But I would say that if you want to stay that way, that as staff, we would basically monitor to 20 to 25. Otherwise, staff would have to take furloughs on their salary. Everybody, including me, somebody's looking at me, it's so pretty. Everybody would take furloughs, which means no pay. They would take a day off with no pay.
And I think to address the consistency issue, I think, at least on my part, I think there was some concern that if we went to a contracted investigator, it wouldn't be the same person, that we would be contracting with maybe multiple people, and then we're getting inconsistency, right? So if it's one person, I think, you know, I mean, I think that's where at least my concern was. So if you're talking about this towards just one person, right? Because if so you look at those reports, it's my, you know, what goes consistent.
You could open it. So that's a good question or a good point. You could open it up when you, if you do a contract, you're going to open up a contract where you're, it's a multiple person, multiple party contract, where you're not just hiring one person on the contract, or if you do a singular. So it'd be up to you. And if you do the contract right, you could do a multiple person contract. Right now, because of the 50 consultants that you have, and Dr. Palmer is not involved in every single investigation. Well, he's involved in every single investigation as far as he'll receive the report and everything funnels then through him. It's the same principle. It would funnel through the contract employee versus the contractor versus him. It would funnel through whether it was an employee or a contractor, because ultimately, you just want to read it for editing purposes so it's not whatever, when somebody has to read out the allegations or something.
And if we decided to change this to a contract position, could we, some budgets from now, change it to an employee status?
Yes, so generally contracts are five-year contracts with it being renewable every year. So they do a five-year contract, so you don't have to go and do an RFP every year. You just do a five-year, and then it's renewable every year. So for that person. But somebody else could bid. Like if you got rid of them, somebody else could bid during the 5 years, and they could empty the rest of the five-year contract. So if you weren't happy emptying them after 1 year, somebody else would stay in for 1 year, and you could replace them again. But if you like them, then they could fulfill the four-year, and then they would. It's incumbent upon them to then continue the contract through the state procurement. It's a process that is not fast, but right now, like, there's four candidates that you guys want. We could, and I'm going to try to work with state procurement to basically make it a closed bidding process, like not open for bidding, and just have the four, if they're still interested, submit through state procurement. But ultimately, it's up to you guys if that's what you wanted to do. So it's called a non-compete, or compete would mean you submit an RFP at the state. You have to do a scope of work no matter what, you have to publish it in paper. But if we can avoid the compete, we could do a non-compete. And I don't know exactly what's involved if we stop it. I know we would stop to do the scope of work, but I'm not certain we'd stop to publish it and all of that. But we could still let those four candidates know. And then they can complete the process that way. But ultimately, I think whether you go with an employer contractor now, there will be a moment in time where we will not have a chief investigator, regardless of the direction, and we'll just use the consultants and as staff, mostly Gary, will take charge on this. We'll look at the reports, get them in the format that you like, which is the way a lot of boards operate anyway, so it's not super challenging or different. It might be a little more work for me and for a bit of time. You're welcome. But it wouldn't be that long of a time, and I don't think, I mean, because they're professionals, it's not like you would have to sit under somebody's wing to get trained up. And I think it's a simple process. It's as simple as me coming in when nobody's here for 6 months to just take charge and start moving. So I don't think it's a challenge for anybody coming in as an employee or a contractor that they need to work under Dr. Palmer to get up to speed.
How do you all feel? I'm under the, I'd almost rather make it a contract position. It scares me to be that close in our budget and then think of having staff to take furlough days because we went over by changing it from what we already have to the employee. And I hear I wouldn't want people to back out, but more than that, I don't want staff to have to operate and make up for the fact of, because this new employee, now they got to take days off unpaid.
I think also, you know, Dr. Palmer's been here forever, and we're going to bring somebody in new. If it's not working out, it's going to be that cumbersome to
right.
move away from them if they're employee status. So we're probably at a better point
for a contract as well.
Yeah. Mr. Earl?
I'd like to weigh in. I think one of the biggest immediate problems is that despite the fact that you've got $5 million in the bank, you don't have money to operate. And it's not completely clear, although Ryan and Katrina and Christina and I had a meeting a couple weeks ago, talked about going to the legislature and trying to get a supplemental appropriation to be able to bolster the board's budget at an appropriate level again. And we'd be totally supportive of making sure that you have the resources to operate. So I think in the medium term, is there a prospect, Ryan, of getting that done? And that's, again, where Dr. Cobb comes in because she's chair of the appropriations committee, to figure out a way that we can be able to draw down on the funds that are already here, that have already been collected from licensees. In fact, in the last 2 years, you've had a license fee holiday because we're trying to draw down on that $5 million, and yet it's still $5 million. you know, that's a secondary issue, but there has to be a way to be able to get the board's budget up to a comfortable level so that you can have the appropriate investigative staff and have the resources to do that, process the complaints, and get them back in a format that are appropriate and at a quality level that you want to see. But can you explain to the board what the process, according to your understanding, of getting a supplemental appropriation?
So, Seth, just let me know if I'm off topic, but maybe I'll try to state it in this way. So in order to stay with an employee investigation, it's a strong likelihood that we, even if we did like a work furlough for staff, we would still likely have to go to across the street to seek a supplemental appropriation, which essentially is an amendment to the budget we're operating on now, the 2020 budget that was completed by somebody that's not here today.
Previous, yeah.
Yep. So it's somewhat of a difficult task. There it starts at the governor's office with OSPB. JOEC is generally helpful, and they'll be, I think, a little bit more behind the request. OSPB, not so much. They just have a different mindset of whose money it really is. The mindset is that every single state agency, all money that comes in is the state's money. So whereas I think the dental community or the accountancy board or whatever, those communities would disagree. They would think, we put this money in, it's technically our money that this board is operating. So there's that disagreement, but OSPB operates on, it's all state money. So asking, I've never gone through the process to ask for supplemental. Christina has multiple times because of her previous work. So she's going to be super helpful to have. And I think, to be honest, we will likely have to do a supplemental anyway because of information. And I don't want to spend too much time on this because I know that I will get off topic. But I think we're going to have to anyway, only because of things that weren't calculated through Central Services Bureau in the 20 budget. They actually left out a huge expenditure, which is rent for the building, and it's over $10,000. And so when I said that we're going to be at 500, that the 10,000 has to come out of the 500. As you can see, that'll be red. So I think we're going to have to probably go and ask for supplemental anyway, just specifically for that. But I think that'll be easy because actually OSPD missed it, and so it's technically their error. And so I think that would be easy.
I don't know if they felt as if since this board for the past 5 years has been reverting funds back into the appropriation, they felt as if we didn't need those additional dollars to pay for rent, because everybody else within the building received those rent adjustments, which is pretty common. Rent goes up every year. Well, they didn't allocate money for our.
Well, that's their fault. And they made us come over here, too. So we were spending a lot less than another place. And they tried to tell us we're going to spend less here, and that was a lie.
Yeah, so I think that one will be easy because Christina's right. We were reverting on average $122,000 over the past 5 years. That's as far as we went back. I'm sure we reverted even before then. But so I think that request will be easy.
So I would be a proponent for making it a catch-up position. What do you all think?
I agree with you.
As long as we get a qualified candidate.
Mm-hmm. All right. So,
and that also, the nice thing about that too is if you have a contractor, they're not required to work as many hours. If they get done, they get done. And so you could get someone who is done with their career or, dental career that can say, hey, I want to go work 15 hours a week. Get them all done in that period of time. You don't have to worry about maintaining hours to maintain benefits. So that's an added bonus to having a contractor, too, is you might get a different type of person who will come in, too. Okay.
Do we need to vote on this?
Probably, since you already directed to go with a different route.
Okay.
Just to have it clear.
Party, I would make a motion that we change the investigator/internal consultant position to be a contract position, not an employee status.
Taylor, second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
We'll reach out to...
Thank you, Mr. Earl.
Yes, thank you.
We'll reach out to the board, for sure, and if they're still interested, we'll help them get to it. It's pretty simple on their side. It's harder on our side, but it's not as easy for them either, because it's not as simple as just submitting a resume. There's a little... They have to go on the computer and stuff, so, but we'll reach out to them.
Okay. If you already have to go and ask for a supplemental, what are we waiting for? Why aren't we just doing it?
Doing it for
to increase.
We are.
Okay,
so we're doing that. We're doing that too. We're just making certain that our budget request for 21 means an increase to the 1.5.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So we're doing that.
Thank you.
Okay. Great. Yes. Great.
All right, agenda item number 8, the American Association of Dental Administrators, AADA, and the American Association of Dental Boards, AADB. So an update and summary. So do you guys want to go first? Do you have anything to update?
So, all right, I will. So, thank you, Kristen. So at the meeting, there is a ton of, in fact, this carried on to the REV meeting in Denver, which is not on the agenda, but it's almost the same, some of the similar topics as in regard to testing. That all came up during the AADA, and I think it came up some in the AADB. So Smile Rep was a big topic, and this board is kind of leaning toward having some sort of regulation on teledentistry. There is already teledentistry statutes out there. There's three. I think it's 32, 32.12, 13.14, I think. I'm not quite, don't quote me on those ones, but there's three. It's difficult to limit somebody's ability to work or to, you know, so I don't think you can shut somebody down. You don't want to be in a North Carolina board situation if that North Carolina was there. But just be cautious on how you go. Right now, we just received a couple complaints against that entity, so maybe this will be the first time or opportunity to get a dive into that topic and tell the industry and stuff. I don't know exactly when it'll be before the board, but it just came in this week. So up until now, from my perspective, at least because I haven't seen anything there happen in any complaints in that realm. But with regard to the test, there's been tons of conversation about the OSCE test, and I don't remember what it means, but for the lay Morgan, who's not a dentist, OSCE is essentially, it's the ability to test to go into the field without using a live patient, whereas the majority of the testing is, I'm not trying to be insulting. So that was a big topic, and there's quite a few boards across the country that are in favor of kind of a hybrid where you do both, and for there's benefits to both, and I don't have a position. I stated right now for this board's position is that right now we have red written in, and that the board would like to not write red out per se, but to take it out as the licensing exam and just list the components that you would like to see versus right now you say you have to take, if you're an initial candidate from Arizona, you have to do red. We take people from CDCA credits and all of that, but they're licensed elsewhere, and so they would have taken the test in Michigan, and so they did credits for CDCA, and so they licensed, and so they received a license here through credential and just took a different national exam. So we'll take those other exams, but not an initial candidate that doesn't have a license. It has to be REV.
Well, REV or REV equivalent, which they are still REV equivalent. So they can still come in for initial licensure.
Just REV equivalent?
Yeah. Yeah. That brings up the point about the OSCE.
And it's less than 5 years.
Oh, right.
They can apply for licensure.
So that was the big thing, at least from my perspective. A couple other things you talk.
To address that point, because OSCE was one of the ones in Oregon and Minnesota, and they could go get a Minnesota license taking the OSCE and then directly pull that over to us.
After 1 year.
It's for a universal license.
Is the universal license now 1 year?
It's 1 year.
Okay.
Yep. And that came up. In fact, I had to do a presentation on that. There was quite a few questions on it, and there's multiple states that are likely to adopt similar legislation as Arizona to allow, I guess, more mobility within the profession across states and not have to go through a ton of stuff to be licensed in these other states. So that was a big topic, the universal licensing. So expect more change. Utah, when they actually passed legislation to allow dentists and hygienists to do Botox and dermal fillers, Oregon is another one.
California has the license by portfolio, which means that they can get a license in a couple of different Mexican dental schools, then they can be licensed in California, and then come over here, which is not very interesting.
Yeah, nothing.
Scary.
Okay, so I want to thank you guys for allowing me to go. It was very interesting, which you'll hear on a future agenda item. My opinion on how interesting it was that more of us should be able to go. So a couple things that I thought was interesting. Up in Washington, they're required to take CE on suicide prevention. In Maryland, they are requiring in schools training for required HIV and diabetes testing as hygienists and dentists. But that's a requirement that they are going to be having out in private practice. So then they found that now they're also writing rules and regs that are requiring counseling then as well, because if we're having to do mandatory HIV testing and somebody comes back positive, and you have to tell them that you may then become a counselor as well. So that's in Maryland, that they're doing that.
And Maryland's gone the other way. They've increased regulation.
Right.
And they have a lot of changes in Maryland.
And Oregon, they're looking deemed to be allowed to provide vaccines and A1C testing within the scope of dentists and hygienists as long as they refer out, depending on the results of the test. Nevada approved dental therapy and teledentistry, and they're writing the rules and regs. Five states allow hygienists to write prescriptions for fluoride and chlorhexidine. They do have to get their NPI number on that. Also, just like Mr. Evanston said, a lot of Smile Direct. We had the ADA lawyer came and talked about they filed a citizen petition with the FDA. They sent a complaint letter to FTCs. They said one thing that I found was very interesting, that the patients are agreeing to an arbitration clause by signing different waivers, and that the Supreme Court has upheld for other companies that when patients have signed this, that they could not be part of a class action lawsuit, so lawyers are wary to take on their cases because they have this signature on it, right? That's being signed in different companies on that. Alabama and Georgia, the dental boards were being sued for antitrust allegations because they said a dentist was needed to be present during the impressions. Smile Direct filed a lawsuit for rates in California because the board did that at their Smile Clubs. There's been 36 complaints made by boards regarding Smile Direct Club. Smile Direct Club says that other boards who haven't taken action are approving their practices. That's how they spin it to the patients. People are getting approval when trying to repair overbites, underbites, crossbites, and when the patients complained about it, wasn't fixed. Smile Direct Club points to the writing in the contracts that the patient has signed that says you cannot repair with their aligners, crossbites, underbites, or overbites. California has that Assembly Bill 1519 relating to teledentistry that requires the dentist providing orthodontic to meet the accepted standard of care by reviewing x-rays prior to movement of teeth. So that was something that they did with that. And then Dr. Salazar then spoke with Smile Direct Club, who we've seen many times in front of here as well.
Soul Lizard.
And then the lawyers had a round table, and they went into further, like Smile Direct Club sued Alabama board, said their scans, because they said their scans needed to be under direct supervision, and then the Smile Direct Club did not ask it to be against the board members personally, because that's something that they had been doing. For instance, in Georgia, the board members got sued personally. The California board they are coming and said that the board acted aggressively against Smile Direct, so they're going after the board and the board members personally. So that was just interesting. And then they also talked on the big opioid crisis. And that was very interesting. They talked about the big lawsuit that's coming and the cities and counties and states and pharmacies. And
is that the one in Oklahoma?
This is the one that's going to go after the Appalachian area.
Okay.
They had many, so it's going to be manufacturers, distributors, some key physicians. For instance, in Appalachian, a West Virginia town of only 500 people, in 1 year, there were over 5,000 prescriptions in that one town. In one year. And then they said, like, 2 miles down the road in a town of 1,500 people, that there were this many prescriptions, and 2 miles down the road, and, you know, 1,500, there are this many. So the Appalachians, they were just inundated with the opioids. And there have already been some settlements in the case, and different pharmacies have been, like, some of the verdicts, $10 million, and to donate up to $1 million to help with the opioid addiction. So that was very interesting with that, those things. Okay. I don't have anything else other than when we get
to. No, I would like to put it on the record that we haven't gone after Smile Direct Club by.
Don't find the scope of the agenda.
Well,
she's giving you an update of what was discussed.
And one more thing. They did talk about the idea came, American Dental Education Association, and they are looking at another pathway to licensure. So the IDEA Copiendum for dental competency under dental schools to prove their competency, like through CODA, basically. And it would be a faculty calibration through a third party, and the students complete assessments. So they are trying to bring that for another pathway to licensure. So it sounds like non-patient-based. They're very pro-non-patient-based.
Yeah.
was very interesting. Yes. Okay, so moving on to agenda item number 9 for the Commission on Dental Competency Assessments, CDCA, staff requesting attendance.
So I probably shouldn't speak on this since I just spoke on the budget. This is subsidized by CDC. It's fully subsidized by CDC, so approving it isn't going to affect the budget one way or the other. So before you make a vote, no, it's an invitation and they're paying for both Christina and I. No.
Which, and on that note, you also went to Rev's same event that they had under the same.
So I'll just make a motion. Can I make a motion?
Yeah.
That we allow the staff to attend BODEX, Arizona, CDCA annual meeting, which will be held Thursday, January 9th through January 11th, Nashville, Tennessee.
30 seconds.
Discussion.
Any discussion?
You haven't voted on your next president yet, and it's not on this agenda, but you want to include that because that the president will also be subsidized by CDCA. And in fact, the majority of the conference is going to be surrounded by whoever attends from this board.
Whoever attends that meeting on from this board on January will be okay to do so.
I agree. My second. So motion, a second, discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay, agenda item number 10, summary of current events. Anything on your end?
So super important. And a little bit sad. Dr. Seaman's not here. If you haven't heard, Dr. Seaman's wife passed away last Thursday. I meant to send an email. I just got back from Colorado and I forgot. So I'm sorry. I just found out myself. He sent me an email. Nobody expects a death, obviously, but it is sudden. I don't know exactly the cause of death, but she was young, and they're just, I'm sure he's upset. So I don't even know if it's appropriate to speak up now, but if you want to do something for his family or send up or maybe do something collective, let me know. I'll send an email about this again, and then if there's a decision to do something collective, then we can take that up a different way. Because it's not on the agenda, and we didn't have time to change the agenda, if you want to do something, send me an email, and I can give you an address. They're in fact, her service is probably right now. So that's one thing.
If you want to give me any of the things I go up there for work all the time.
Thank you. A couple other things. So I've already said that we've met multiple times across the street. Because of that, it's kind of opened the door for just having dialogue. They haven't spoken to somebody from the dental board, they said, in a long time. They appreciated the conversation. We've met with multiple people. I can't remember everybody. But I always say that not to be discouraging again. This board used to have a lobbyist. I can't remember his name. Yes, Stuart Goodman. But there was a law that passed a couple of years ago. Well, there was first an executive order that you couldn't use a lobbyist, and then they passed a law that no board can have a lobbyist at all. So I am a lobbyist, and so is Christina. So we met a couple times. This board will likely have legislation. Well, not next session. Representative Bartow now. She's going to run legislation next session to change the way we do renewals, and that will actually help part of the budget. So this came up in the discussion with her when we were talking about the budget. And so she's going to run legislation to change the renewals from an annual. It's a triennial renewal for everybody for 3 years. So it'll stay triennial, but instead of renewing one time a year, June 30th, it'll be during your first month or first date every 3 years. It's an easier budget to manage, time frame. People don't work overtime, which then limits the amount being paid out to staff and stuff like that. So that will likely...
So you feel better about that than to have it the one time in June?
Yeah, it's a whole lot easier to manage.
So tracking that would just be on the birthday setup, right? You have to revamp the software to do such, right?
Yeah.
And that's no biggie?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
for sure. So,
the extension committee meet every month, then?
Fun, Dr. Harmon.
Or you just get rid of the board and handle everything, because everything's on recommendation of the board anyway.
Right. Okay.
It wouldn't be as voluminous anyway. So I think it's
Sherry, how do you feel about that?
You get kind of beyond the scope.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Sorry.
So
that's like the first. Thank you, sir.
So universal licensing is another thing that has come up across through these conversations. Everybody loves the idea of universal licensing, I think even the community, but there's a couple provisions that are within it that we've talked about stuff that NBAG's office about, that they may do changes to basically get rid of a couple provisions to just make it easier. I don't want to get too much into that because I don't want to change that, but that's just the current events of legislation. I think that was it.
All right, agenda item number 11, discussion of possible action items for future meeting agendas. I have a couple. I would like to see, when we're adjusting our budget, if we can maybe put in our budget that more board members attend AADB. There were some boards that the entire board was there, and especially their new members, and I'm not saying that, but even if we had one other person come or made it that we could rotate through additional people, because especially as new board members coming on, I wish that I would have been able to go as a new board member because you learn so much about just being on a board and what's going on in the surrounding states as well. So I would love for additional board members to be able, and we can talk about that at a future agenda item. I would like to also, a future agenda item, to put on there to talk about hygiene, expanding the practice, and don't shoot me daggers, to allow hygienists to write prescriptions for fluoride and chlorhexidine also, like other states are starting to go to as well. And then I would also like to put on the agenda as well that when we were in the process of rewriting the rules or changing legislation for the rev for the exams, that we also put in there for it being a clinical exam, patient-based clinical exam, to specify that, that it's on a live patient, and that we possibly add in treatment planning as a necessary part of the exam piece as well. So I would like that to be on a future agenda.
Can I add to that? That Rev has offered to have someone come and give us some opinions on that too.
Perfect. So that can be, we can let them know when it's going to be on the agenda.
They'd like to be part of that.
Yes, so that we can to talk about that since we were already in process of doing it. Okay, so those are the three things that I wanted. Anybody else?
Go ahead.
No, Christina's had raised her hand.
Do you want them to attend the January meeting? December?
Sure.
December's
sure. Put it on January? Is that okay? Sure.
I thought maybe you were saying to Rev attend the CDCA meeting.
What kind of things are on December's agenda?
January 31st.
You have tons of stuff on there. Multiple complaints, mostly.
Just complaints, not rule changes or anything like that.
Yeah, most
that's why it's a day.
I'd like to be part of that too, and I'm going to miss December's meeting. Oh, yeah. You are as well.
Thank you. That's why I was wondering what if there was anything that I was going to miss. I know we were going to revisit clarifying dental assistant regulations in terms of digital impressions and stuff like that. I know we're going to revisit that at some point.
Put that back on the city church agenda item.
And come up with the actual verbiage, because I know we've held that off.
You guys did it. And we just purposely left it off.
Yeah. Are we going to revisit that? I guess is the question.
I'll do that, Jim.
Okay.
Members at conferences probably doesn't need to be on an agenda. We'll just write it into the budget.
Okay. That's for that supplemental.
The supplemental.
And then do we need to also add in any updates from the committees?
We'll always put committee.
Because we're going to have a committee meeting next week for the
record.
Yeah.
But you won't be there Friday, so I mean, December. Do you want to have that?
Right, that's what I'm saying. Are we writing this in?
Okay.
Okay. The next board meeting date, agenda item number 12, Friday, December 4th. And then agenda item number 13, anybody want to make a motion?
Favor moves that we adjourn this meeting.
Party seconds, motion and second.